This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice where I tell you you have absolutely no case. If you're injured, need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com. And if you're a lawyer and want to help our listeners, please go to handleonthelaw.com, click on the Join Today tab at the top of the page.
The following is a pre-recorded program.
There is a case out of England, the UK, that I want to share with you because it really is interesting. It has to do with boiling lobsters alive. And a lot of people say, hey, wait a minute. Lobsters can feel pain. And the general consensus, particularly among fish restaurant owners, say, no, they can't. So what ended up happening, research that was done by the London School of Economics and Political Science found that there is scientific evidence that lobsters have the capacity to experience pain, distress, or harm. Okay, with that being said, what does that mean? Well, right now, lobsters, even though they do experience pain, distress, or harm, are in fact exempted by the law, and you can boil them alive. And that becomes a little problematic because it turns out that lobsters are really the only animal out there that is not protected. Other laws protect, well, crabs, lobsters, crayfish, including octopuses or octopi, squid and cuttlefish, they've been excluded from this bill. And only lobsters are, in fact, now protected. And it's hard to argue that octopuses, don't have the ability of feeling pain. I mean, they're very intelligent creatures. So now in the UK saying, okay, lobsters, they can feel pain. After reviewing 300 scientific studies, we have concluded cephalopod mollusks and decapod crustaceans should be regarded as sentient. Basically, it means they can feel pain. They're living beings, and it is now illegal to boil them alive, which is pretty disgusting anyway, to be honest with you. You know, you just take the cleaver and you hit them over the head and you do a guillotine thing and they die almost instantly. All right, let's take some phone calls.
Hello, Joseph. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hello, sir.
Yes, sir.
I had just a quick question. I was curious. I got in a recent DUI, and I was curious about two things. One, I am in the military, and I was curious if maybe the judge would take favor to that and see it as an opposition to criminal prosecution. Or
maybe,
whether or not
maybe. But the problem is you have a DUI on your record. What the judge may do is lessen the fine because one of the things about DUIs, the fine itself can be really high. So, you go, Your Honor, I'm in the military and I'm hoping that has some influence here. Have you lost any limbs while you were in the military?
No.
That's unfortunate. Okay, because that would help a lot. I think the judge will take that into account because you're in the military. What do you do in the military, by the way, Joseph?
I was signing up for signal intelligence reconnaissance.
Okay, and are you near combat at all? Did you do a tour of combat duty?
No, sir.
Okay, well, I still would tell him you're in the military. If I'm the judge, I'm going to give you some credit. Now, what I would do is lessen the fine. Let's say your fine is $1,000. California, you don't want to get tagged. New York, you don't want to get tagged. And here's why. Because the fines are high to begin with, and then they add assessments to the fine, court cost assessments. It's a revenue call. And so literally you can walk out with $1,500, $2,000, $2,500 fine on top of insurance loss, on top of a DUI on your record. Now, Texas is a great place to happen because there's a 50-50 chance that the cop who pulls you over is drunk. And so, you know, different place, different time. Brenda. Hello, Brenda. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Good morning, Bill.
I have a
storage unit, and a friend of mine was moving and needed to store some of her stuff, so I offered that she can put it in my unit. And I went in to take some of the stuff out to make room for hers. And they were running late. And they said they'll be there in 15 minutes. And so I went to the office and asked to, you know, get cleaned up. And I chatted with her, explained to the manager what was going on. And I had to open the gate. So I waited and waited. And they didn't get there till about an hour later. And then we went back to my unit, and when I got back, my stuff was missing.
Hmm.
So I reported it to the manager, and they said, there's nothing they can do about it. I said, but you have notices that there are video cameras all over the place, so can't we see who took it? And she said, no, they really don't have videos inside the unit, even though there are signs all over.
Oh, that's interesting.
Can I sue them for my items that was stolen?
Yeah, okay. There are a bunch of issues on this one. That's actually very interesting. One is they say they have videos all over the place, and they don't. They just made that up. And
yes.
you relied on them saying that they have videos.
Right.
And that the damage there, I would think it just lowers the amount of rent. Those are your damages. Now, the issue of someone going in and stealing it, how much security was there? How did they get in and steal it? Is there another gate someplace that you can get in? Do they drive out the front gate? How were they able to steal the property?
Well, I think so. And this is what I told them. It's the unit, the storage, the stuff that was stolen was in one building. And normally when you go in and out, you have to go to the gate. There's only one gate, and you have to punch in a code to tell you which unit you're going to be in so that it's not going to ring the alarm. So I told them they know exactly who would be in that unit.
Oh, okay. All right.
And they said, well, they can't accuse anybody of stealing.
No, they can't. They can't. And they don't have video, so there is an issue. And then the argument is, why didn't you keep it locked until the mover showed up for security? That's what I would argue, saying, what are you doing leaving it open, an open storage unit? And did you put it outside? Did you put the furniture outside?
No. It was inside the unit.
Okay, I get
it. Outside my unit.
Why didn't you lock up? Why didn't you lock up the unit until everybody showed up?
Well, because it was after hours, and I
thought... Doesn't matter. I mean, it's... okay.
And I also thought there's a video camera. Who would steal something when there's a video camera?
Hang on. Your argument, who would steal? Those people would steal. And the other argument is, how much money was worth it? How much was the value of the property inside the storage unit?
Well, the stolen items were about $1,000 worth.
How do you prove that?
So the night.
How do you prove it? You got to answer the question, Brenda. How do you prove it?
Hold on a second, though. Because when I went back in, when everything was already closed, I knew what was stolen and I told
them
what was
stolen. How do you prove it?
Well, they were supposed to prove it by their video. If it wasn't...
But even if they took out furniture, how do you prove that that furniture was worth $1,000, $5,000, $10,000?
Okay, this is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI.
AM 640.
More stimulating talk.
Got no regard for the thing that you don't understand. You got no fear of the underdog.
Welcome back to Handle on the Law.
Eric! Hello, Eric. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hello.
Yes.
So I buy my daughters these word finder books, word search books, a 6-year-old, 8-year-old, and I saw something very inappropriate in it.
Okay, and?
It was the N-word.
Okay, in a book you bought your daughter, a word search book? All right.
Yeah. And I'm African American, and I was wondering, they should have some type of censor to go through all that, and I was wondering, do I have any repercussions?
No, just don't buy the book. Offensive, you bet, Eric. Bad taste, you bet. But you have the right to just not buy the book. No, you don't have the right to tell a publisher you can't use that word. You really don't. When you talk about the N-word being thrown about, And we're talking about public figures who, or even has happened to talk show hosts who have thrown that out on the air. Not illegal, perfectly legal. Problem is you lose your job. And so it becomes more of a societal issue than a legal issue. You have the right to say it, publish it, use it, and it's that's just the way it works. Now, the good news is there are repercussions, of course, just not legal ones. So I would contact the publisher and say, like, are you crazy? And that's all you can do. You can't stop someone from doing it. We really do have a First Amendment right here to basically say whatever we want, short of inciting a riot. Hey, go kill someone or go into the Capitol and, you know, kill all the Congress people there or yelling fire in a crowded theater. That you can't do. But short of that, welcome to the First Amendment. Lalo, do I have that right?
Yes, Bill.
Lalo. You know, that's that actually should be the name of this show. I'm just thinking about that. What can I do for you, Lalo?
I have a special needs trust that I wrote using one of those CDs you get and so forth. And in my will, I have left things to the trust that after listening to you for 40, 50 years or however long it's been.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Yeah.
It sounds like none of that's valid. That I need to transfer things beforehand.
Well, you can transfer. Correct? You know what, Lalo? You can transfer anything into a trust you want. I don't understand what is the whole purpose of that trust? You have a special needs trust, and I'm trying to think of what the special needs trust does. It protects people who have special needs.
Yes.
And you know, you have to help me on this because
I have a special needs son. Who requires lifelong
got
care.
It. Okay, fair
and
enough.
If he receives too much money, then he's ineligible for any services.
Right. Fair enough. Okay.
So the special needs trust is just to protect him from losing
right.
All his
right.
Services.
All right. So you can transfer anything you want into the trust. What is it that you want to leave outside of the trust? What do you want to will?
A house.
House. You want? Okay. Why don't you? Yeah. I am.
So,
yeah. You can.
That,
I think you can. I think
house,
you
they wouldn't accept it.
The trust wouldn't accept the house.
The title company would not transfer would not put it in the trust name. Do I need a tax ID?
That's the case. I don't understand why not. But I think you're going to need a trust and estate lawyer to help you with that because it looks like there is a technical issue going on in terms of transferring the property. It's in your name, and now you want to transfer to the trust. Right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And I don't know. Is there a limit to the amount of money the trust is able to hold?
No. No.
Then I don't understand why you can't do that. That's above my pay grade. That's a trust and estate question that I can't answer easily. So go to handleonthelaw.com. We do have trust and estate lawyers on there. Interesting. Sherry. Hi, Sherry. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Yes. Okay, I'm good. What can I do for you? Or I'm bad, or it doesn't matter, and nor do you care. All right, what can I do for you?
No, I have a question. I signed a contract for my daughter to have a wedding in 2020, June of 2020. Of course, due to COVID, we had to reschedule it for this June 2021. The contract I signed was for 65 to 100 guests, ceremony, reception, dinner, and dancing. As of right now, the city of San Clemente is only allowing a ceremony for 30 people. So that means that their contract is not valid. But they're saying in the contract it's written force majeure, which is supposedly protecting them. And they say that if I cancel the wedding, because I'm like, you can't offer me what I signed up for, they would retain 35% of my original deposit, meaning they would retain over $6,000 and only return a little over $2,000 back to me. Do I have a case if I
You know, it's interesting because the COVID and the legal issues around COVID are new and can be very complicated. I don't even know if a court has ruled that COVID is force majeure. where contracts are no longer valid, can you simply say there is no contract, therefore I get my money back? Can the venue say there is a contract and yet we were forced to cancel it through no fault of our own? It's like a tornado hit the building. So, you know what? I really don't know which way they go, because that has not yet been established by an appeals court. So it's a question of negotiation. It's a question of filing a lawsuit if you don't agree. It's more a question of negotiation than anything else.
All right. It's holiday shopping season, which means you're on the internet buying like crazy. Well, shop only on secure sites with retailers you trust, strong passwords. Keep an eye on your bank and credit accounts for fraud. Why? Because every day we put our information for risk on the internet. And the holy grail with these cyber thieves is getting your identity. Once that happens, you're in a world of hurt. Then there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats. And there are plenty of them out there. And if they detect your information has even potentially been compromised, they send you an alert. And you'll have a restoration specialist to help you if you become a victim. Now, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor every transaction at every business. But protect your life with LifeLock by Norton. Join, save up to 25% off your first year using the promo code HANDLE. Call 800-LIFELOCK, promo code HANDLE, or visit LifeLock.com, promo code HANDLE.
This is Handle on the Law.
This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice.
Hello, Andrew. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Morning. Looking forward to being told how dumb I am.
Excellent. You want me to do it before or after your question? Your call.
Let's give it a shot, and then you can tell me.
Excellent.
I'm the trustee of my father's estate. He's passed away about 3 years ago, and we'd hired a law firm to set up a trust for us and ideally protect us from taxes. And upon his death and one of my first meetings with the law firm, we found out that it hadn't been set up to protect us from any federal estate taxes, leading us to a tax bill of just under $1 million. So I was wondering if there's any recourse.
Oh, yeah, there could very well be. So you're not going to be called up. You're not going to be called dumb either before or after or in the middle. Hell yeah.
Great.
Now, I'm assuming you're talking about a pretty good-sized firm. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was I obviously won't say the name, but it's a large firm.
Okay, that helps.
I ended up firing them for overbilling.
Yeah, no, that helps a lot, because if there is liability, if you have a small independent single practitioner or a small partnership and you get a massive award, they just go bankrupt on you. So that is not helpful. Large firms, a different story. So you hired them and they wrote the trust. Is that the issue, or they mishandled it?
They wrote the trust.
Okay.
And didn't include any tax protection.
Got it.
From the estate law.
All right. And how much would you have paid? Is this $1 million of taxes you paid extra over and above what you normally would pay under a well-written trust?
Yes. So,
okay.
It was 40% above the threshold of the inheritance tax.
Not enough. So,
$980,000.
Okay. Andrew, based on that, I think you have a legal malpractice case on your hands. And what you're going to do is hire a legal malpractice attorney, a lawyer who goes, a professional malpractice attorney. Not just, there's medical mal, which everybody knows about. There's also legal malpractice, in which lawyers who have a wrongdoing or do something wrong get tagged. And I've heard over and over again, oh, lawyers won't go after each other. Oh, lawyers are a club. What a crock. Lawyers are sharks, and sharks eat their young, and they eat their own. So, you get to find a law firm that goes after lawyers. Based on what you said, it sounds like a clear-cut case of legal malpractice. And the damages, this is the trust, by the way, or the beneficiaries, it's $1 million worth of damage. And that goes right to the law firm's insurance company. And what will happen is whatever lawyer you hire is going after, obviously, the wrongdoing lawyer who turns it over to his insurance company, because that's why you have malpractice insurance. Every law firm I know buys malpractice insurance. I buy malpractice insurance, and I don't practice law. And the reason why I buy malpractice insurance is, if you look in the dictionary, Bill Handel's show, the first word is malpractice. And I have insurance. Go to handleonthelaw.com and talk to one of the lawyers and say, I've got this case, and where do I go? You have, based on what you said, you got a hell of a case there, that's for sure. Stephen, hello, Stephen, welcome. What can I do for you?
Hey, Bill, my daughter's 10 years old, and about the first two years of her life, I was claiming her in taxes, and year three, her mom got a seasonal job at the mall, and I got some W-2s printed, and she went behind my back, and she filed taxes. So long story short, put me in deep with the IRS. I'm coming up on the 10-year mark here in about a year or two, and I'm entering a full-time student program, so I won't be working full-time as much. My question is, how likely is it that the IRS is going to come a-knocking for that money?
Okay,
$10,000.
Now, you've never been audited, right?
No.
I just leave it alone at this point. Your chances of an audit based on your income, pretty small. Now, there may be an algorithm in which it kicks up that both of you have filed taxes. Are you separated? Are you divorced?
We are separated. We're never married.
Okay. And you file jointly or married?
We both filed separately, and then Basically I would claim the child, and then she kind of went and started doing it.
Yeah, okay. So if they go after you, you're claiming you didn't know. If they go after her, she's going to claim you didn't know, she didn't know. But I think bottom line is the numbers are small enough that unless you get audited, you don't even worry about it.
Now, just how likely are they to try and go after my veteran's disability?
Because they can't touch it. They won't touch that. Stephen, they don't touch that.
All righty.
They don't touch it. You'll be able to talk to them. That doesn't become a big issue. Yeah. Interesting. It happens all the time where one spouse, they're separated, get divorced, and they're both claiming dependents. And then just argue with the IRS. And then the IRS figures out half and half. It happens all the time. So it is not a big deal unless you're talking zillions of dollars. Hello, Lynn.
I had a tenant move in a year ago, signing a two-year lease. He's a physician and an attorney. And last July, he was having some issues, and I said, fine, you know, you can leave. I had an attorney draw up a document that he could leave because I thought the COVID problem was going to be ending. And I didn't hear from him for 6 months until this past January, when he sent me an email and said he's leaving in 60 days, and he moved out last Wednesday. My question is, I think they call it an estoppel issue, where he signed a lease, but then we had verbally talked about him leaving.
Yeah, verbally means nothing. Verbally means nothing. Just take that right out of the equation. What did you have in writing?
I had a document in writing asking him to sign that I agreed, and he agreed to leave a year early, or, more than a year early. He owes me $90,000.
Okay. Did he sign the agreement?
He did not sign
it. Good. That helps you because he's still on the lease.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. You have a lease. There's an attorney's fees clause in there. He owes you 90 grand for the rent. You just sue him.
We're going to mediation. I mean, we have to before I can sue him, right?
Well, it depends on the lease.
The lease says we go to mediation.
Then you go to mediation. You go to mediation.
And do you think my chance of winning through mediation
Mediation is not winning or losing. Mediation is just trying to figure out if you can come to an agreement. And if you can't, you go to court or you go to arbitration. Mediation is not binding. Mediation is just trying to figure out if you can agree.
Oh, okay. So at that point, he may then give me some of the money he owes.
Yeah, you agree. You have a mediator, and the mediator says, okay, you owe $90 or $90,000 you owe to Lynn. And he goes, I don't think I do. So split it in half, or how about $70,000? You just start arguing back and forth.
So then his attorney was not right when he said to me that because I had offered him to leave,
it doesn't matter. He didn't sign. Verbal means nothing.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah,
that
attorney's blowing smoke. Ironclad law in the law is when you have anything dealing with real estate, there are no verbal agreements. And that's historic, and I'll tell you why that's historic. When you go back into common law, which our law is based on, English common law, the first thing that they did, the Magna Carta, right, 1215, establish the rights of property. That was where it all started. And so you have property rights that have that have extended, and the law has been extraordinary. You know, the rights of, you know, your right to a lawyer, all that. Lawyers at all, before lawyers even existed, you had property rights. And that's where it goes back. And it has to be in writing. That's one of the ironclad rules.
All right. This is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer,
go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640.
This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice, where I tell you, you have absolutely no case.
Shanna, or Shauna, whichever way you pronounce it, welcome.
Hi. Hi, Bill.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. So my husband passed away about 3 years ago, and we were separated but still married. And he had a paid-off house that he took my name off of when we separated. Anyways, it's been in the probate courts for 3 years now. There's a niece that's claiming entitlement, and I'm all breathy because I'm on a walk. She's claiming entitlement. She's not on the will. So, and now it's in trial, going to trial. And I have a question. Why would the judge... she's not in the will, right?
Right.
Why would it go to trial?
I have no idea. Well, because she's insisting on it. Because when you contest a will, you can force the issue of going to trial, depending
based on what, though?
I'm sorry?
Based on what? What kind of evidence?
Based on the fact that he intended to leave it to her, that she is entitled to it because of being connected by blood. Now, when you say you're separated, you were still legally married?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I don't know where she's going with that. I have absolutely no idea. Now, was there a will leaving it to her or leaving portion of it to her?
No. The will was to leave it to me and my children.
You're fine. I have no idea why she's going to trial. It makes absolutely no sense. But she's paying attorney's fees, that's for sure. Or he's doing it on contingency. How much is the house worth, Shanna?
About 620.
All right. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. I don't see the basis of it going to trial. I don't even know why it survived summary judgment. But so be it. James, hi James. Welcome to Handle on the Law. What can I do for you?
Thank you. Over the last 15 years or so, my wife has engaged an immigration attorney to do paperwork required for several of her relatives to attain residency in the United States. About 5 years ago, she gave this attorney $2,500 to prepare the necessary paperwork to gain residency for her sister. The attorney has not done anything yet. My wife has been in continual contact, and the attorney...
Okay, I'm a little confused. About 15 years ago, what did she start doing? Did she obtain residency 15 years ago?
She had obtained residency for a number of other of my...
Oh, I see. Okay, so it's 5 years
she
ago.
Okay, it's five years ago.
All right, got it. So 5 years ago, there was a specific contract, if you will, a retainer agreement paid to the attorney to help your wife get a green card for some relative, right? And the attorney has done nothing in 5 years?
Nothing. And,
okay, that's easy. That's easy. You ask for your money back, James. You go, okay, it's time for you to give me my $2,500 back. Goes, well, I've done some work. And then you throw in the magical words, you've abandoned my wife. Abandonment of client. Because you have done nothing for 5 years. Now, he may come up with some paperwork that he's done and backdated it and whatever. And then he's taking a risk. If he has actually done something, and has he claimed to do anything?
No.
Okay, then you just asked for your $2,500 back. And here is the good news. Had he filed during the Trump administration, there'd be no chance anyway. Now that there is a Democratic, certainly pro-immigrant president in power, you know, it's a much, much better chance. But, you know, it's obviously time to get another attorney or call him up and say, you better do this or we're suing you. And we're going to report you to the state bar.
Okay.
All right. That's the easiest way of doing it. Yeah, people don't know that, you know, attorneys, everybody's scared of attorneys. Don't worry. I mean, they're going to claim to sue you, which is, you know, BS for the most part. But there's a lot of power there. The state bar, boy, they are aggressive. I mean, they're, well, you complain to the state bar, they open up a case. I mean, instantly. You know, as a matter of fact, I've gotten two state bar complaints about the advice that I give on this show. And I got a letter from the state bar, the state bar investigator, saying a complaint has been opened about you, that you give you know, bad advice on the show, and people were paying attention to it. And then we got into a discussion, saying listen to the show, and I go, does that sound like bad advice? And the investigator said it sounds like no advice that anybody would listen to. All right, they wrapped up the case, done, dismissed. By the way, that's very close to the truth.
All right, it's holiday shopping season, which means you're on the internet buying like crazy. Well, shop only on secure sites with retailers you trust. Strong passwords. Keep an eye on your bank and credit accounts for fraud. Why? Because every day we put our information for risk on the internet. And the holy grail with these cyber thieves is getting your identity. Once that happens, you're in a world of hurt. Then there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, and there are plenty of them out there. And if they detect your information has even potentially been compromised, they send you an alert, and you'll have a restoration specialist to help you if you become a victim. Now, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor every transaction at every business, but protect your life with LifeLock by Norton. Join, save up to 25% off your first year using the promo code HANDLE. Call 800-LIFELOCK, promo code HANDLE, or visit LifeLock.com, promo code HANDLE.
This is Handle on the Law.